Please be seated. The second case for oral argument this morning is in the matter of the restatement of reinstatement of Joseph J. Simrack as an attorney at law. With petitioners, we have Mr. Richard Johnson. We have more people at council table than I have on my list, so I'll just have you identify yourselves.
Richard L. Johnson and Your Honor Cindy Arndt and Raleigh Samp are also here.
And I'm familiar with Mr. Samp. Okay, and that's your client next to you?
Yes, that's Mr. Samp.
All right, thank you. And then you'll be presenting, Mr. Johnson?
Yes.
We do have a custom here on these types of hearings. You're allowed 20 minutes, but this is a unique type of hearing in that we allow the client to address the court directly. It's not mandated, it's an invitation, and I'll leave it to you and your client to determine if he wishes to address the court directly. If so, then you would want to reserve that portion of your time.
Your Honor, I think I'd like to make an introduction, and then I would like Mr. Smyrak to introduce.
Okay. All right. And for the State Bar of South Dakota Disciplinary Board, we have Mr. Robert Freeberg and Mr. Thomas Freeberg. Mr. Robert Freeberg, I understand you'll be presenting this morning.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Very well. With that, then, Mr. Johnson, you may proceed, sir. And you and your client have 20 minutes.
Court, counsel. My name is Richard L. Johnson. At the present time, I'm representing Joe Smyrak. As I indicated, Cindy Arndt and Raleigh Samp are also attorneys involved in this matter. Cindy Arndt represented Mr. Smyrak at the disciplinary board. Raleigh Samp and Cindy are both supervising and are willing to supervise Mr. Smyrak should the court allow him to be reinstated. On August 1st of this year, the disciplinary board recommended reinstatement of Joseph Smyrak on the following conditions, three conditions. One, that he passed the South Dakota bar exam, including the multi-state professional responsibility exam. Second, that he worked for 2 years following reinstatement under the direct supervision of an attorney and regularly report to the disciplinary board his activities, including verification from the supervising attorney. And three, regularly attend counseling with a qualified mental health professional during the probationary admittance and provide verification to the disciplinary board.
Did your client agree to these conditions?
Has he read them?
No, has he agreed to it?
Yes, he agrees to them, yes.
Okay.
And in fact, he's actually been doing some of this already. Mr. Smyrak has been in counseling with Bobby Risden, a qualified mental health professional, since 2013. And I think she wrote a letter that's attached to one of his affidavits that describes his progress and her recommendations in regard to the counseling. Secondly, he's been doing legal research and writing, subject to the court allowed him to do that. And now he's been doing it with Cindy Arndt and Raleigh Samp for about 4 years. Also, he's done research for other attorneys in Sioux Falls and elsewhere. He formed a corporation so that he could have a business of legal research. And through that, he's also kept current on South Dakota law.
Counsel, I'm most concerned about the protection order proceedings.
Yes.
He's had 8 protection order proceedings over the course of the last 14 years involving 6 women in 2 states.
That's correct.
And in my view, that's concerning regarding whether or not he is morally fit to proceed with the practice of law, where he would be handling the work of vulnerable clients in vulnerable situations, especially in the family law setting. How has your client addressed these matters?
He's going to address them himself, but also I would say that he's addressed them through the counseling that he's been involved in. And I think that Bobby Risden in her letter correctly states that he's had some problems, he's been working through them, and he's been working through them for several years, and he intends to continue to work through them. That's how he's going to deal with that issue. And he'll address that specifically too, after I'm finished with this judge. He's been through drug and alcohol rehabilitation. He's a drug and alcohol recovery coach with Face It Together in Sioux Falls. He has support from attorneys in Sioux Falls and from his family. He's also employed as another way to earn some money in the restaurant business, and he's been employed in that through these years. And he's volunteered with Feeding South Dakota, Junior Achievement, and the Banquet in Sioux Falls. Again, I think of the two prongs that the court has to be concerned with, and I guess one is the protection of the public from fraudulent, unethical, or incompetent activities involving the attorney, and the second is the preservation of the image and integrity of the attorneys, the Bar Association, and the legal profession as a whole. It's the second issue, I think, probably, that the court is most concerned with. And based on that, I'd like to then introduce Joe Smyrick to the court and to allow him to address the issues, I think, that
yeah,
the court
has. Have you been supervising him, too, or just Mr. Samp and Ms. Arndt?
Well, Ms. Arndt and Mr. Samp are the ones that have volunteered to do it. If the court, or if it's necessary for a third attorney, I'd be willing to do that.
I asked, have you been? Are you?
Oh, I have not been.
Okay,
no.
All right. No. All right, well, that's thank
yeah.
you.
All right.
Okay, Mr. Simrak, let's visit with you a bit. Your track record, very candidly, is not very good. And if we do admit you, that is a certification by each and every one of these justices that you possess good moral character. What can you say to us today to convince us that you now possess that good moral character by clear and convincing evidence?
Your Honors, I have to tell you that over the course of the past 8 to 10 years with regard to some of these particular circumstances, I have had to work through several personal issues, whether those personal issues be relationship issues or whether they be issues of depression, kind of whether it was as a resultant of not being able to do the type of work that I've wanted to do. I realize and I take responsibility for the reason that I have not been able to do that, and to kind of humble myself in a way to work in the restaurant industry. And some of that industry and some of that depression has built itself into what was some toxic behaviors. And those behaviors are the things that over the course of the past 10 years, 13 years, ever since my release from prison, that I've been working steadily with in order to understand the types of things that lead to those behaviors and the way to have healthier relationships in my personal life. While you might see that there are several different protection orders by several different women over the course of this much time, it is over the course of 10 years, and I would submit to the court that they are definitely not a representative cross-section of the entirety of the relationships that I've held over that much time. We've been talking a little bit more about our personal, our office where I work in our law office, and in that particular office, there's two males and the rest are females, and I don't have any particular issues with working with those particular females. Some of my best friends are females. In these particular regards, especially the ones involving Tasha and Misha, they happened over a point in time where it was right about the time that I had gotten disbarred and I had made some poor choices with regard to relationships and the DUI situation. And so those types of things were affecting me then, and that's why I sought counseling to move more into a better idea of how to handle relationships. In the past, I think that I've had a lot of trouble handling rejection. And I think that is what has led to some of these protection order situations. In the situation of Hope's, it was dealing with a college situation. That relationship was about 10 months long, but the other ones were about a month and 2 months long. They weren't even significant relationships. And the reality of the situation is that during those particular relationships, I was what you might refer to as kind of an oversharer. And I think that part of the reason that things occurred the way that they did was as part of my inability to handle the rejection or to not be tenacious in trying to pursue some sort of civility between us, that you know, each person kind of understood that the blast person had filed a protection order, so this is the way that I should go about handling this particular
thing. Now, you've been working under the supervision of two veteran lawyers that are well-known to this court.
Certainly.
Do you plan to continue that if you get your license, or are you going to try something else or on your own, or what's your future plans?
Well, my plan at this point is to maintain with SAMP Law Office and to work under the supervision of both of those veteran attorneys as recommended by the disciplinary council.
Even beyond the 2 years?
At this point, yes, if all works out
well. So you basically like what you're doing?
I do, in fact. I really do. Right. With the court's permission, I've had the opportunity to work with several local attorneys do through research and writing, brief writing, dealing with federal cases, dealing with, you know, child porn issues, dealing with, you know, real estate issues. I mean, it's kind of interesting going into the niche that I did. It was the type of thing that whenever an attorney had a question that they didn't necessarily know the answer to or couldn't come up with something, well, that's when they gave me a call. And so I had the opportunity to really delve back into my legal abilities in order to be able to do the research and the writing projects that I have been, all at the same time maintaining that counseling and learning to have healthier relationships. I, you know, over the course of the past 7 years or so, not the only one that was ever filed was the one that was by Caitlin Hillmo that was recanted within the first hour, and then a letter was written, you know, stating that that was done in error and that some of those things were exaggerated. So I think that, you know, that sometimes there's a retributive aspect in why they chose to file the order, but I will not discount that some of my behaviors are the things that had led to them feeling the need to do such a thing. So I'm taking responsibility for those and moving forward with my
counsel. Did you ask Ms. Hillmo to write the letter?
Or I didn't, no.
Did she do it unilaterally?
She did it on her own accord. She felt bad. My understanding from her is that she never intended it to be the end of our relationship, and that she was with a friend that particular day and just made a poor decision. She called me within hours after doing it and said that this is what I had done, and I said that she did not want to go through with it.
Basically, the legal profession is pretty much self-policing, which means each and every attorney has to be the responsible party for their own conduct. It quite frankly troubles me a lot that when you were disbarred in Nebraska, despite the mandate of the rules in South Dakota, you never self-reported our court. What's your response to that?
The only thing that I pled with the disciplinary council and with this court was it was ignorance in that particular regard. There's not just ignorance in that particular regard, but also upon release from treatment after having voluntarily relinquished my license and then having the state disbar me, I went through 2 years of intense therapy, and it was a very difficult time to, you know, not only try to get over a methamphetamine addiction, which was a bear, also to try to make ends meet, humble myself to living with my parents, working in the hospitality industry, and I proffered a statement and waiting to see just how long or if I was going to prison. So, I mean, to say that there wasn't a lot on my mind to distract me from what might have been my responsibility to inform this court, I simply plead ignorance, and I apologize to the court for not making that admission.
So take me through that part now that you mentioned it. So did you keep your license active in South Dakota during the intervening time period?
My license was, I know, how did I... inactive status, I believe, is the way that it was.
Did you pay something every year so that you would have been
I believe that that would have been the case. Yeah, I think that that would have been the case. I don't remember exactly how that went, but I never practiced after my disbarment in the state of Nebraska. I moved back home pursuant to treatment.
Mr. Smyrak, kind of along the lines that Chief Justice asked you, it didn't appear that you disclosed these protection order matters in your most recent petition for reinstatement.
Okay.
So why was that?
Well, I guess the relevant matter to me in terms of that was the criminal matter, and the protection orders being civil matters, I guess, never, you know, in each one of them, they were either dismissed at hearing or voluntarily dismissed. I guess it wasn't to be elusive about those matters. In fact, during the course of the disciplinary hearing, we had admitted to all of those things and provided copies of the actual protection order petitions that I would submit to the court, you know, were not necessarily 100% accurate and maybe inflated in order to be able to get the protection order proceeding. My understanding with the court here today is that perhaps you had questions, maybe even involving particular circumstances that were alleged, whether those allegations were proven or not. And that's why I stand here before you today to answer to those questions if you have them.
Well, we have, I think by the latest count, about 500 attorneys in Minnehaha County, which is a goodly number, to say the least. If the purpose of practicing law is to serve the public, what do you have to offer if we let you in that would justify your readmittance, given the fact we already have 500 lawyers in that county?
That's a really great question, Justice, Chief Justice. It's, to be perfectly honest, I have had experiences on both sides of the bench. And there's an age-old adage that always said that, you know, the best cop would probably have been a criminal at one point in time because he understands the mindset of the other side. And I think that that's definitely something that I have gotten a taste of, some sympathy. At the time that I was serving in prison and the time that I was serving in jail, I had the opportunity to talk to people, and they're like, I'd want you to represent us. You know what we're going through. And I do. I have a reasonable plight towards that type of thing. I have both sides. And to be perfectly honest as well, and without trying to sound conceited, I am good at what I do. And right now, my goal in this, since I've had so much help from so many wonderful people, is to give back and to do and to help other people that are in a similar situation as mine, whether it be struggling with divorce issues, family issues, drug issues, whatever it happens to be. If I'm given a second chance, I want the opportunity to be able to give others a second chance and to make things right with the profession, with the bar.
Do you think you could maintain your objectivity? Sometimes a lawyer can get themselves in a peck of trouble by deciding that their client's also their friend.
That's understandable as well. I take my responsibility as a lawyer seriously, and if you look at my record, you'll find almost no instances of professional irresponsibility. I maintain those relationships at arm's length, and I represent my clients zealously in that particular regard, and I don't see any issues of collusion or following back. I mean, there might be sympathy, there might be empathy, but I would still take that responsibility seriously.
Mr. Smyrak, you've had some issues with alcohol over the years. What's your current use of alcohol?
Minor. I mean, I
tell me what minor is.
Right, a few drinks a week, maybe something at dinner. In order to deal with that particular situation, I actually joined with Face It Together, and I actually work with other people having drug and alcohol issues. I moved downtown, so I walk just about everywhere I go. I've maintained the idea of not driving after any use of alcohol, and it's just not been my drug of choice or anything that's really been important to me in my life. So, I mean, I've pretty much...
When's the last time you think you were under the influence of alcohol?
Oh, it's been a long time. Probably more than I can even remember.
More than a year?
Yeah.
So the two TPOs in 2017, was there any alcohol usage involved in either of those circumstances?
In
2017?
Two?
There were some petitions for a protection order in 2017?
Okay. That, is that the Caitlin Hill mall? I mean, there was one, and then, yes. And was that pursuant to alcohol? That,
I'm asking you, what, did alcohol play any role in that?
Not in my part, but she was drinking that evening.
Were you drinking alcohol together?
Yeah, earlier we were, but I was not with her the entire evening. Actually, she had come over after being with another friend.
Are you willing to abstain from the use of alcohol as a condition of admission?
If that's necessary, certainly. I'd do anything right now to be able to go back to doing what I was meant to do. I've wanted to be a lawyer since I was 11 years old, and it pains me and every day to realize that I had done something to mess up the opportunity to do what I was meant to do, to be able to help other people. I want to have that opportunity again. I know my story isn't over.
I've got a question about it. You were licensed in Nebraska, basically practiced in Nebraska, although you had a license here. But most of your practice is in Nebraska. Am I right about that?
Yes.
So why not go back to Nebraska and ask for reinstatement there?
Well, because South Dakota is my home state. This is where I took the bar. My friends and family are all here. I am newly an uncle with an 11, 7, and newborn. My sister moved back. My brother-in-law is the newest pediatric dentist in town. And I have no children or wife of my own, and I'm looking forward to being a role model and helping to raise those three little boys. That mean the world to me.
Mr. Spire, for what period of time, and I'm certain it's probably long since expired, but for what period of time were you under federal supervised release following your release from prison?
Well, there was a pre...
that DAPA program.
So I was pre-release, and then there was a probation. And both were about 2 years. Following my release, I had a 4-year probationary term, but completed satisfactorily within two.
Did you have violations that require court intervention?
No.
That period of time?
No. Not during the post-release.
Are you under any type of supervision right now?
I am not.
Okay. I see your time has expired. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Freeberg, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Please the court, counsel. My name is Bob Freeberg. I am counsel for the disciplinary board of the State Bar of South Dakota, and come here in response to the notice of hearing and to answer any questions you may have concerning the board's recommendation. I just have a couple of things I would say at the outset, and then I'll probably have said all that I came prepared to say. First of all, I think that your concerns about Mr. Smyrak's history are well-founded. They were well-founded with the board, and I think this was I know it was the second, perhaps the third time we have had him before the board in the process of getting permission to serve as a legal assistant and so on. So those have been concerns. I can't tell you, of course, what's in the mind of the particular board members, but I know as I reviewed the transcript that Ms. Dvorak raised some questions much along the lines of yours, Justice Kern, and apparently she was satisfied with those responses.
Was the decision of the board unanimous?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And it strikes me as somewhat unusual. Usually when you are here appearing on behalf of the board, you're not a proponent of what the other side's asking for.
That would be very true, Your Honor. And I was trying to figure out, I know that I was here on a reinstatement for disbarment on Richard Hopewell, which did not go well.
I remember that. It didn't.
And we've had some other reinstatements, but I think they have all been from suspensions rather than from
Steve Peer.
Disbarment. That was, in fact, believe it or not, before my time.
Oh. Mr. Zeiser wants to handle that one. Okay. All right. You know, it's And I would say the same thing to you, and I'm sure you're well aware of it, is that if we do reinstate that, our signatures on that certificate of practice law or certification by us to the public that we are convinced by clear and convincing evidence that this gentleman is fit to practice law in South Dakota and possesses good moral character.
I think the, excuse me, I agree with that description. I think the board is aware of that. And the board is also aware that they're not the final arbiter on all of this. But the board, in all the years that I have worked there, has always been sympathetic to second chances for people. And I, my own assessment of what moved the board to this point is the support that Joe Smirek has had in getting to this point. I think the board respects his ability to get the meth demon out of his system. I think the board was swayed, probably, by the support he's gotten from these people sitting at the council table today. And I know, just anecdotally from, you know, talking in the hallway, that they're really impressed by the support of his family. His parents have stood by him through some pretty dark times. You know, having your son locked up in the federal penitentiary is not an easy time, and Mr. and Mrs. Smirek have been stalwarts, and as you get to know them, they're delightful people as well. So I think those are things that, that probably swayed the board a little bit. The other thing I would point out is that the other reinstatement that I can recall from a disbarment was Mr. Swenson. And that was probably 2 years ago, about that. And the court's decision in that matter was to require him to pass these same bar examinations and then come back to the board for further recommendation following successful passage. I will tell you, we've been advised now, just within the last week, by his counsel that he has successfully now completed all of those bar examinations. So we'll be talking to him again, I think, at our January hearing. And so that, if that process is followed in this case, it would be up to Mr. Smirak to complete those bar examinations, come back to the board, and take another look at his situation. So, Minister Scarborough, we are.
Go ahead, please, Chief.
Mr. Freeberg, based on what you know today or what everything you've heard up through today, do you think that Mr. Smirak was completely candid and disclosed everything to the disciplinary board when he was in front of you, in terms of protection orders, those sorts of things?
Yes, I don't know if those protection orders are kind of fuzzy, as you would well know, having ruled on many of them in the course of your time as a circuit judge. But aside from some of the nuances there, I think he's been very forthcoming, and I don't think he's tried to disguise those things that happened.
Do you think the board was aware of the sequence of events, let's say the number of protection orders, their frequency, the years which they came, more so than the allegations? Do you think they were aware of the volume?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was all.
I read some references. They understood that there was some TPOs. I couldn't really figure out if they knew about all of them.
I think so. And, you know, one of the things that happens in this work that I do is that I get telephone calls from people who are trying to do what Mr. Smyrak is trying to do. And I just tell them that candor and full disclosure are important, essential, and that it's a real uphill climb.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a little out of order, but I'd like to invite Mr. Samp and Ms. Arn up to the podium.
Us. They'd like to talk to us.
Okay. For just a question. Obviously, Mr. Smyrak depends very greatly on your supervision and your instruction. Now, I'm not trying to chain you to your desks as a life sentence, but do you see yourselves being able to continue in the practice of law? Because he says he wants to continue to work with you. Do you see that that is in your future plans?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't happen to believe in retirement.
Well, that's to be commended. I heard a 98-year-old preacher on TV one day say the word retirement's not in the Bible.
That's exactly my view.
Okay. Ms. Arn?
Right now, even though my legs are a problem from ataxia that I inherited, I'm going to die with it, not from it. It's not in my brain, it's in my cerebral area. So I actually feel legally I'm at the top of my game. And my week is 9-hour days, 8 to 9, except for the 2 rehabs that I go to. Every morning, I tell Joe I like to see the whites of his eyes. I have a little time in the morning for phone calls and staff meetings, and so my contact with him is daily. And I've tried to impart on him, which is not said here in any of the pleadings, but what I've been trying to do is mentor him in more on things that sort of man-to-man. And after raising 4 homemade kids and over 70 foster kids, 50 of them unwed teenage mothers, I can tell you that I don't get fooled easily. And I think the court knows that I'm a very strict disciplinarian. I've had those kind of talks with Joe. I've also had tried to guide him, and for 4 years it's so far worked, on my views on female-male relationships, which are succinctly, you can't treat a woman too well. The better you treat a woman, the better she treats you. Never hit or verbally abuse a woman. The proper answer when a woman asks you to do something is yes. Anyway, that list of things that I've tried to do with our foster kids, I've tried to do with him.
Okay.
And he is learning.
All right, good. Ms. Arndt, do you see yourself being available for him? You know, as I could say, not forever, but for a reasonable period of time in the future. Let's put it that way.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anything else you wish to add?
Well, when I first met this young man, he talked to me about wanting a second chance. And so I thought, we'll try. We tried small research projects, and that went fairly well, and we gradually increased those. when Raleigh and I felt confident, we even said to colleagues, you know, you might want to see if this fellow can research for you. He seems to do a fairly good job. And those comments have come back that he did do a good job. And I believe those are signified by the documents that you folks have before you. I would suggest to the court, I think we need to offer an opportunity. I think we should offer that opportunity with supervision. I think that's important. As you guide out of law school, we know the book, but we don't know the other part. And I think that as you are in this process of essentially starting over and being mindful of the concerns, I do suggest that we would stay and help with the supervision for a reasonable period of time.
Thank you both for coming up here. And sorry for springing on this on you with no notice. Okay, but appreciate you coming. All right, let's see. Mr. Freeberg has finished his presentation. I guess you have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honor, I have nothing else to say unless Mr. Fletcher has questions about Mr. Smyer.
Any further questions from the bench for Mr. Simmer? Okay, if not, I guess this...